I'd like to reconvene the January 2010 meeting of the Marine Resources Commission. Next item on the agenda is public comments. This is an opportunity for those in the audience who wish to speak on matters that are not on the agenda. Mr. James? And then Captain Bob.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Good afternoon, sir.
Members of the commission, good afternoon. Sometimes it pays to be young. I glanced at my newspaper on Sunday. Here's what I found. Scientists at the Virginia Fisheries Laboratory report that significant amounts of radioisotope zinc 65 have been discovered in both Chesapeake oysters and Atlantic clams. The cause of the contamination could not be pinpointed, but one government scientist believes it is the result of the fallout of stratospheric radioactive particles from nuclear tests in the Pacific. I went to my library and tried to find this report, and I did manage to come up with radioactive waste in the marine environment. Robert M. Brown and Donald W. Pritchard, November 1961. Very interesting reading. Now, how does that all tie together with Ellis James coming again and speaking his little piece before you? We are into the era of aquaculture. And it seems to me that we need to be very much on top of and aware of whatever things have resulted from that initial report in the last century. We need to have a real handle on whether or not possibly part of our problems that we're experiencing with the loss of oysters might be tied to those kinds of issues. That's Ellis James's perspective. Today, if you haven't seen the Daily Press, we're talking about PCBs. I believe these two are tied together by common sense and logic. I know that this item is not necessarily in your purview or jurisdiction. However, as experienced members of this commission and knowledgeable individuals about all of these issues, I would urge you to pay close attention and, where possible, not to get you in trouble with your employer, the state of Virginia, to exercise your awareness of what the need is for Virginia not to abandon, especially on critical toxic items, PCBs, radioisotope, any of these issues that could impact the aquaculture that is fast coming online and is already hammering our watermen and their livelihood and their life experience unjustifiably and to a degree that makes you weep sometimes if you didn't have good hold on life. I would urge this commission to pay close attention to this, and if there is, in fact, a report or an analysis of what the results have been moving forward from 1960 with regard to the impact on the oysters and the Atlantic clam, that we bring ourselves up to speed. And I say this with no disrespect to this wonderful front row that's filled this afternoon. I understand that we have people with excellent expertise. But sometimes the people can come forward and also prod a little bit and see if we can't get a handle on what the current situation is. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. James. Always a pleasure. Captain Jensen.
Good
Good afternoon, sir.
How are you?
That's my new hat. That's better than you did the last time when you're in my office and you told me I was fat, so go ahead.
I'm here to present...
That's okay.
...a young man who has worked his off and he's got something to say.
Yes, sir.
And I'm going to sit down.
Good to have you here.
Hi, my name is Russell P. Burke. I am a graduate student at the Virginia Institute of Marine Science.
How about moving over there, Russell, if you would, so we get it on record. Thank you.
On record, Russell P. Burke, Virginia Institute of Marine Science. I'm here in support of Captain Bob Jensen and the Rappahannock Preservation Society. I have something I'd like to give to each of you.
Please. Thank you, Mr. Burke.
Captain Bob provided the commission with a pamphlet of a number of different articles.
We got that at lunchtime. Appreciate it.
That's some good background. I've tried to get everything down onto one page. I have a general proposal. It doesn't require you to vote on anything today, but it's mostly to inform you of general intent to move forward with a large-scale program.
Okay.
The proposal is that there would be a VMRC-sponsored collaboration of state, federal, and nonprofit organizations focused on algae reduction in selected waters of the Chesapeake Bay using concrete module and other reef designs as this term ARU, algae reduction units. We may all be quite familiar with the issue of the state of Chesapeake Bay and algae blooms that happen every summer and major low oxygen events that impact fishes and shellfish and basically the whole health of the bay. I want to provide just a brief background of Captain Bob because you may all have met him at different times of your career here or outside of this room, but I feel like it's worthwhile just to get a brief background of his life and what his contribution is here. He spent 28 years in the Navy as a naval engineer and 10 years after that as a consultant to the Navy. After retiring in 1984, he decided to teach young people about the Chesapeake Bay through the interactive and intergenerational School of the Bay program. The following year, the Rappahannock Preservation Society was formed, RPS. In 1987, he attended the first meeting of the Executive Council in Baltimore, Maryland, and became more intrigued about Chesapeake Bay issues. In 1993, he attended a meeting regarding Norris Bridge, where it would have been closed for a time as they were expanding it. And there were some concerns about the closing the bridge due to the hospital that was built on one side of the bridge and that others wouldn't be able to get to it during the nighttime hours. His contribution was a plan to cut the construction time in half by keeping the bridge open and was able to help them to assist the federal government bring in the project $8 million under budget. In 94, the Chesapeake Bay also benefited from this project, and this is in particular what I wish to describe. RPS and McLean Contracting, in conjunction with the VMRC, managed to procure the concrete from the bridge for construction of two large oyster reef complexes, Steamer Rock and Christchurch Rock. So keep that in the back of your mind in 94. Now we're 15 years plus later here. In 2000, a five-layer concrete modular reef was deployed by Reef Tech McLean, a company that Captain Bob is part of, adjacent to Steamer Rock. So the stack structures in 94, as you have some images to show you, were made from bridge material, but this was a specific design aimed at increasing the water flow over a reef, maximizing surface area for oyster reef settlement and survival. From 2005 to 2007, myself and my advisor, Dr. Von Lipsius, sampled the concrete modular reefs and Steamer Rock itself. In 2006, we accompanied the Rappahannock Preservation Society to a meeting with Secretary L. Preston Bryant in Richmond for a proposed 2020 program, 20 reefs in 20 weeks, 7 in Maryland, 13 in Virginia. And it was well received. Former Commissioner Pruitt attended the meeting as well. But there really was no means to get a program like that moving. There was no funding, and we were in the midst of the early stages of the environmental impact statement for non-native oysters. So there was really no security as to what would happen with oyster restoration. So the reason I mention all that is to provide you with some of the major findings of the work that I've been working on for the past few years. Both reefs increased the settlement surface area for oysters by approximately 15 times that of the underlying unstructured bottom. The reefs contain greater than 1,000 oysters per square meter of river bottom, and this is amongst the highest ever recorded for any reefs, restoration or otherwise, in the Chesapeake Bay in modern history. And they supported a complete subtidal oyster community, which means that it's not just for oysters, but you have mussels and sponges and the fish and crabs that live on it. And one question about artificial habitats is, do they begin to replicate or mimic natural habitats? And in this case, they certainly do. Steamer Rock itself, as of 2006, when the work was done, contained greater than 4.8 million oysters and greater than 30 million mussels over a single acre of bottom. Those are very large numbers, but what does that mean for algae reduction, which is the big proposal here? It means that during peak filtration, and that peak filtration, as far as temperature goes, happens to occur when there you have these peak algae blooms, equates to greater than 4 million grams of carbon per day being filtered out. Now, not all of that is processed. Some of that is re-released. But that's a very large number. And what that means for proof of concept is that these reefs have formed mature communities, and they stand as the largest successful alternative oyster reef complex in the lower Chesapeake Bay. Now, I just wish to underscore that by saying we've looked around, and this is some of the best we've seen. So what does that mean for you and for us and for the community at large? The proposal summary is this. A public-private partnership geared towards mitigating habitat loss, which has happened due to fisheries and just due to shoreline development and all of the activities of man over the past 400 years. Increasing algal reduction capacity via bivalve filtration. And increasing the number of recreational fish reefs, which goes right along with BMRC's artificial reef program. And this next sentence is really important. Productive capacity of these reefs was quantified in the Rappahannock River. And though we concede competitive designs may exist, we offer these data as proof of concept for designs tested in Chesapeake Bay. In other words, you can continue to test different things ad infinitum, but if you're looking to have a functional project now, where after the non-native environmental impact statement has said there's going to be a lot of money spent over the next 10 years, you may want to have something in hand, and this is a design that has been tested and proven effective. So in closing, to be effective, the scale of the proposed program is large. Its cost is an estimated $25 million, $5 million over 5 years. Congress may spend up to $500 million on oyster restoration over the next 10 years or the next decade. That was one of the major conclusions in the executive summary of the non-native oyster environmental impact statement. We believe the BMRC, as a Chesapeake Bay steward, can facilitate such a large-scale multi-agency restoration effort in Virginia, and we thank you for your attention and consideration. And I remain available, as is Captain Bob, for any further questions you have, and my contact information is at the bottom.
Thank you, Ross. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Anyone else with public comments? Mr. Robinson, Mr. Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to provide the commission with a quick update. Last night, the Blue Crab Management Advisory Committee met, and we received a presentation from Ron Lipschitz and some of his students on a recent study done on a bycatch reduction device. And they had recommended that we consider adopting regulations requiring the use of these devices in the recreational crab pot fishery. The committee has been reluctant to do so for a number of reasons, but it does seem that there might be an opportunity for the commission to consider this issue at the commission level and perhaps discuss educational outreach type strategies that we might consider in terms of trying to get the word out about the potential benefits of these. The study is compelling in that there was no statistically significant difference in catch, and they do eliminate all of the, or virtually all of the terrapin, diamondback terrapin interactions. They also reduce spinfish interactions as far as bycatch. So it's a study that I think is worth reviewing here at the commission level. Again, the committee is not recommending any regulatory action with this, but I would suggest that we consider putting it on a future agenda for discussion by the commission.
Sounds good to me. Jack? I think we can get Rob to come down here and give us a presentation. I'd like to see it.
He gave a good presentation to the committee last night. I think the committee likes the concept of an educational effort. I know money's in tight supply, but these devices are relatively cheap, and for just a few $1,000s, we could probably purchase quite a number of them and make, you know, one or two available to recreational fishermen who are interested in trying them. We can put things on our website to encourage people to look at these and supply some limited time to get them out there in the field for people who are interested. But
well, that sounds good. That way we can get a report from those most likely to use them and have experience with them on what they're, not just from a scientific perspective, but from a layman's perspective is use and ease of use and just the results. So that'd be great if you could arrange it. That'd be fine. Anyone else? Public comment? I'm sorry, Mr. Bowden. Sir.
As you know, several years ago we changed the striped bass management regime, and it's worked very well for the fishermen and the resource. I think it's done a very good job. A few things I think need to be looked at. And I would like to reconvene this special striped bass commercial fishery panel we had set up. A couple of things probably are no longer necessary. Some other things probably need to be changed some. And I think that would be the first place to start. So I would request that.
Okay. Any specifics you want or just an overview on?
We really need to look over all of them, but I will give you a couple specifics. One of them is, for example, the buyers have to call in every day in December. When you have an individual quota, you're not tracking a quota. I didn't understand why the calling was necessary when you had a quota that was, when it was called, it was called.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, you're tracking 500 individual quotas,
mm-hmm.
and you're responsible for any overages you would have. So really, you're just making more work for staff and dealers that's not necessary. And another thing is, with the recent budget troubles that the state's experienced, the staff has had to reduce what they can do. And one thing they've done is you can't transfer any tags in January and December, which January doesn't pose a real big problem. But I think December does, because you have people get down to a low amount of quantity left, say 500-600 pounds, just for example, and it becomes unprofitable for them to catch them, and they can no longer be transferred. And I can understand that because of lack of staff, not being able to do it now. But in this same situation, you have an individual who's responsible for their quota regardless. If I let you catch it and you go over, I'm still responsible and it will come off my quota. So some of these things may not necessarily be pertinent anymore. I just like to review the regulations and see what we can look at.
That sounds fine. Jack, if you can arrange that, get them together and talk it out and see what we can come up with improvement-wise, that'd be great. Thank you, Ari. Further comment?